ancient mythology could appear, to some, to be stories created from the imagination, a weird fiction fantasia of an action hero's adventure. However, the controversial writer of the 50s, Emanuel Velikovsky, has a different view. Velikovsky had discovered that myths throughout the world are in basic agreement. He infers that for different civilizations from around the globe to create, by coincidence, the same themes again and again would be a near impossibility. Unfortunately, for the most part, academics have ignored these messages of our ancestors as fanciful, improvised nonsense. However, in the words of psychoanalyst Theodor Reich, myth is not the tale of some fictitious past, but memory of the past told in a fictitious way. Not a story told as history, but history told as a story. Historian Richard Heinberg was researching our ancestors' stormy and warlike past. As he continued, he increasingly came across older myths, myths from a time before our violent history, a golden age when human beings were godlike and noble and our planet a bountiful garden. Heinberg realized that, although these paradise myths are found everywhere, scientists are reluctant to take them at face value because of their apparent conflict with the evolutionary theory. He concluded that either the myths or the modern theories must be wrong. Due to the disagreement regarding the evolutionary theory amongst evolutionists and its lack of foundation, Heinberg decided to proceed with the view that the ancients knew what they were talking about. Most anthropologists have denied paradise as a part of our history because few artifacts have been found to attest it. But what artifacts should we expect to find of a people who left no trace and no record? For example, speaking of the perfect men of old, Huang Zu of around 400 BC says, "In the age of perfect virtue, they attached no value to wisdom. They were upright and correct without knowing that to be so was righteousness. They loved one another without knowing that to do so was benevolence. They were honest and loyal-hearted without knowing that it was loyalty. They fulfilled their engagements without knowing that to do so was good faith. In their simple movements, they employed the services of one another without thinking that they were conferring or receiving any gift. Therefore, their actions left no trace, and there was no record of their affairs." Perhaps the law of entropy is one reason to take the opinion that the ancients were correct. Albert Einstein said, "The law of thermodynamics is the only physical theory of universal content which I am convinced that within the framework of applicability of its basic concepts will never be overthrown." The first law of thermodynamics is energy can never be created or destroyed, and the second law is of entropy. That is, when anything happens, energy is transformed from a high level to a lower level of energy. This would suggest that we, beings of conscious energy, should also transform from higher to lower. Anthropologist Jeremy Rifkin said, "It's strange indeed that we in the modern world are willing to see the history of the universe as beginning with a perfect state and moving toward decay and chaos, and yet continue to cling to the notion that earthly history follows the exact opposite course, that is, moving from a state of chaos to a progressively more ordered world." The dramatic technological developments of the past two centuries are often cited as evidence for the idea of progress. We take for granted that civilization is a recent development representing the triumph of knowledge over ignorance. Yet despite the impressive gadgetry with which we surround ourselves, we are periodically compelled to acknowledge that in the fundamental matters of personal fulfillment, happiness, and harmony with our environment, we, human beings, are little better off today than we were centuries ago. Interestingly, world myths put paradise not at the end of history, but at its beginning. We also tend to forget that historical and archaeological vestiges of ancient civilizations resist an evolutionist interpretation, and that the ancients were virtually unanimous in declaring their earliest ancestors as far superior to themselves. Present-day human beings are unique among our planet's life forms. No creature other than man indulges in comparable sorts of senseless cruelty, and no other creature exhibits man's self-destructive propensity, which now threatens the future not only for our own kind, but of all life on the planet. Man's activities, rather than natural, seem profoundly unnatural. Disrupting weather, destroying forest and river, causing the extinction of plants and animals, and fouling the air, water and land. In comparison, other forms of life exist in delicately balanced synergistic ecological systems, enhancing and supporting each other. While human beings are indeed capable of creating great beauty and of revealing noble character, the fact remains that our planet is even now on the verge of ecological and nuclear catastrophe, precisely and solely because of the actions of mankind. Perhaps the fact that in our time the mythic memories of our race have been thoroughly dissected by academics but largely dismissed as having any real meaning shows that we do not want to remember. Nevertheless, considering the precipice at which we stand, it would seem the course of wisdom to put scientific or other prejudices to one side for the moment and look again into a timeless mirror and reflect on who we are and where we have come from. The most ancient written texts which survive come to us from the civilization of Sumeria. This civilization flourished in what is now Iraq. The Sumerians spoke of a place called Nilmun, the original paradise home of mankind, a place where death and disease and sorrow were unknown. The somewhat later texts of Babylonia and Mesopotamia say that Adapa, the first man, was equipped with vast intelligence. His plane of wisdom was the plane of heaven. The Egyptians too believed in a time of perfection at the beginning of the world. The Divine Ones created the sun, order was established in their time, and truth came forth from the heaven in their days. It united itself with those who were on the earth. Likewise, in ancient Iran, Persia, there was memory of the reign of Yima, the original universal monarch who presided over an age when there was neither heat nor cold, neither old age nor death, nor disease. And summarizing African myths of the earliest times, folklorist Herman Bowman wrote, "In those days men knew nothing of death. They understood the language of the animals and lived at peace with them. they did no work at all, they found abundant food within their reach. The ancient Hebrews in the first two chapters of Genesis. And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And out of the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. In ancient Greece, Hesiod, around 800 BC, wrote of the first age, the golden age of Kronos. They lived like gods without sorrow of heart, remote and free from toil and grief. Miserable age rested not upon them. When they died, it was as though they were overcome with sleep, and they had all good things. For the fruitful earth unforced bare them fruit abundantly and without stint. Hinduism, the Mahabharata. The first age was without disease, and there was no lessening with the years. There was no hatred, no sorrow, no fear. In these times, men and women lived as long as they chose to live, and were without any fear of death. Judaism, Garden Eden. There is a garden fragrant with 800 varieties of rose and myrtle, and 4 fountains, one of milk, one of wine, one of honey, and one of balsam. Buddhism. Both Buddhism and Hinduism describe a golden age as a part of a 4-age cycle. While Buddhism speaks of nirvana as a state of the spirit, Lamaistic Buddhists speak of the city of Shambhala as a place of quietude and ancient wisdom, which can supposedly be found in the north of the world. Scriptures, myth, and religion have served us with a dual purpose: to remind human beings of the time of perfection in the beginning, and to provide techniques by which something of that experience can be recaptured. They have also reminded us of how we stepped down from our original purity and innocence, and how we became suspicious and warlike. All this is contained in countless myths from around the world. Examples could be cited in profusion, but a few will suffice here. The ancient Chinese recognized that before them were giants, men twice as tall as us, who once inhabited the realm of delight, but lost it by not living by the laws of virtue. The Christians believe that Adam and Eve were forced from heaven because they ate the forbidden fruit, that is, their awareness changed from soul to body. There are many similar recordings of a lost paradise. One folklorist, Richard André, collected 88 distinct versions from every part of the world. In an Egyptian saga, which in some ways parallels the biblical story of Cain and Abel, the god Set kills his brother Osiris, the son of the earth and of heaven, and thus brings the golden age to a close. According to a version from Nepal, the earth was once inhabited by heaven dwellers. At a certain point, there arose among them the desire to eat the fruits of the earth. Once they had tasted the earth, they lost their ability to return to the higher world. The Messiah in Africa tell how the first man came down from heaven, while his wife came forth from the earth. They were forbidden to eat from a certain tree, but the woman was tempted to do so by a serpent. As punishment, she and her husband were made to leave paradise. For whatever reason, the hearts and minds of humankind became separated from the source of their own being. Shame, fear, and greed appeared in consequence. Human beings began to worship, and the earth, which had before reflected the pure consciousness of man, began to undergo change. First subtly, and then in wrenching global cataclysms which uplifted mountains and submerged continents. Except for a few artifacts, Only memories remained of this so-called paradise. There have been many prophecies claiming that eventually we would reach exactly the sort of impasse in which we find ourselves at the beginning of the 21st century. A situation which seemingly can only be resolved through extinction or collective transformation. A Hindu story called the Mahabharata, which was written 2,500 years ago, describes something similar to Hiroshima. There was hurled against the cities a single projectile charged with the power of the universe. An incandescent column of smoke and fire as brilliant as 10,000 suns rose in all its splendor. It was the unknown weapon, the Iron Thunderbolt, a gigantic messenger of death which reduced to ashes the entire race of the Vrishnas and Andakas. There are memories of natural calamities, flood, earthquake and fire that transformed the old world to new. Virtually all cultures carry forward prophecies of a time when the insanity and recklessness of mankind in a state of spiritual sleep or forgetfulness will force matters to the brink, when an ultimate choice will have to be made. The descriptions of that time are strikingly familiar. The Hopi Indians, for instance, foretold horseless chariots rolling along black snakes over the land and cobwebs by means of which people could speak across great distances. The Hopis believe that within the next few decades, mankind will either destroy itself or enter into a new spiritual age. They foresee wars, famines, and natural catastrophes as a step in this great purification. The Tibetans say that we are now living at the end of a period of darkness. A series of global catastrophes accompanied by political strife will initiate a great purification and a new era of spirituality and light. Isaiah the prophet said, "And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains, and all nations shall flow unto it. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more." Just as life has a cyclic movement, for example, in energy, the planets, galaxies, within nature, seasons and day and night, etc., there seems to be a similar suggestion in ancient memories. Falling from heaven into hell, and then God comes and liberates us from hell once again. In myth and religious literature, we continually find the images of sleep and wakefulness, of forgetting and remembering, of imprisonment and freedom, all representing the loss and rediscovery of our true identity. It seems we have been doing this eternally. Plato said, "There have been and there will be again many destructions of mankind. and quoting Egyptian priests who told his ancestor Solon. And when this civilization is destroyed, you have to begin all over again as children. Aristotle said, "You will sit in front of me again, and I shall be talking to you and holding the stick just as we are now." In Norse mythology, there is a prophecy in Elder Edda. After the sun turns black and the earth sinks into the sea, there will be a new heaven and a new earth in wondrous beauty once again. Also in the book of Revelations, John said, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away." Both Hinduism and Buddhism also describe a cyclic path from truth to falsehood and then to the age of truth again. A possible symbol of cyclic time, which is common amongst many races, is a tree of life. The trunk of the tree representing oneness, peace and unity for the first half of the cycle, and the branches representing division and peacelessness, that is, further from the seed, the essence of their being. When the tree of life reaches its full maturity, a source of peace or power comes to plant the seed of a new world tree. This is regularly shown with a symbol at the top of the tree, a time when God comes to liberate souls from their sorrow. Is it possible that now in the 21st century we find ourselves at the end of an old world tree? The artificial human identity created when man's consciousness fell is poised for one final self-destructive binge. Meanwhile, the true divine identity has an unprecedented opportunity to emerge in expression individually and collectively, provided there are human hearts and minds sufficiently yielded to accommodate it. The Book of Revelations: "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away the tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." And he sat upon his throne and said, "Behold, I make all things new." We have searched for heaven since the beginning of recorded time. The future golden age has now come very close. God Father Shiva: "In this age of gold, love will be every exchange between people. Abundance will be everywhere, and there will be no unfulfilled desire. No one has any desires for attainment, but all attainments will desire that their masters are served. All of the very best things that exist in this old world will be there, in their purest, perfect form, the form in which they give the greatest happiness. In all directions, the mines of all treasures will be full. Every treasure will be ready to give its own form of happiness. Matter will serve you, and time and nature be your friends. Everything will give happiness. There will not even be a name for sorrow." You call me God, Jehovah, Allah, and Shiva. You have built churches, temples, mosques, and statues to me. You have waged wars in my name and made sacrifices to me. You say that I am in nature or in the sky. You say that I am everywhere. When you suffer, you call out to me for help. When you are happy, you forget me. You have worshipped me in human form, and yet you do not know me. Prophets and teachers have tried to point the way to me, but no one has found me. I am your Father, and I am the one with whom you can have all relationships. I am not born, and like you, I can never die. I am light. My form is a tiny invisible point. You too are a subtle point of light. My world is the world of silence and peace. You used to dwell with me there, in that golden silence. Then you were born into a body and began to create your story. You forgot your home and me. I have come again to remind you of who you are. I have come again to reveal to you the secrets of time. I have come again to fill you with all the love and power and peace that you have missed for so long. Remember. Remember. Thank you.